Tommy McNeil. Public impeachment hearings targeting U.S. President Donald Trump in his efforts to push Ukraine to investigate one of his chief 2020 Democratic challenges will start this week, I should say next week. House Intelligence Committee Chairman said this on Wednesday. After weeks of closed-door sessions, Schiff said that Americans will get a chance to judge the case against President Trump. Schiff said the intelligence panel will hear from Bill Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, and the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent when public hearings start next Wednesday. Iranian media video this week purports to show equipment upgrades at some of the country's nuclear facilities. It may further erode Iran's deal with the world powers and came as the U.S. slapped new sanctions on individuals linked to Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda.
On Tuesday, President Hassan Rouhani announced that it will start injecting gas into the centrifuges at one of its nuclear facilities. The gas accelerates the process of making high-grade nuclear material from uranium. A day earlier, Iran said it would also replace some centrifuges with newer models, claimed to work 50 times faster. Iran has long demanded that the remaining signatories of the nuclear agreement, that is, European powers, Russia and China, protect his country from sanctions. Rouhani says if the Europeans hold up their end of the bargain, the treaty can be salvaged.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is threatening to deepen military ties with Moscow unless the United States lifts its embargo on the sale of a key fighter jet. The warning comes ahead of next week's planned meeting between Erdogan and President Trump. Turkey is set to purchase the Su-35, Russia's latest fighter bomber. The country is already provoking alarm among its Western allies with the procurement of Russia's S-400 missile system. This is VOA News. The CEO for American Airlines says they are feeling more confident that the grounded Boeing 737 MAX jets will soon be approved to fly again. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
Boeing expects U.S. safety regulators to approve the plane's return to service by the end of the year. And CEO Doug Parker says that sounds like a reasonable estimate based on conversations with regulators. Parker says when the MAX is allowed to fly, we will be ready. And to match that optimism, American is already selling flights on MAX jets as early as January 15th. Those planes have been grounded worldwide after two crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia killed 346 people. Shelley Adler, Washington.
Two Iraqi protesters reportedly killed overnight into renewed street clashes in the Shiite holy city of Karbala. In Baghdad, Iraqi security forces fired live bullets into the air to disperse demonstrators gathered on a bridge in central Baghdad. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador reiterated his opposition Wednesday to a suggestion from U.S. President Trump that Mexico wage war against its drug cartels after suspected gang members massacred 9 U.S. women and children in the northern part of that country. López Obrador said at his weekly news conference his administration was moving forward with this promise to address the underlying causes of violence in Mexico with social programs. The drug cartel members suspected of being responsible for the massacre may have mistaken the victims' SUVs for those of a rival drug gang, according to Mexican officials. The foreign ministers of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan met Wednesday in Washington with President Donald Trump and Secretary Steve Mnuchin to discuss the Grand Ethiopia Renaissance Dam on Ethiopia's Blue Nile. In a joint statement issued after the meeting, the ministers all said that they noted the significance of the Nile to the development of the people of their countries and reaffirmed their joint commitment to reach a comprehensive, cooperative, adaptive, sustainable, and mutually beneficial agreement on the filling and operation of what is called the GERD. The massive hydropower dam has been the focus of an escalating feud between Cairo and Ethiopia over water resources. And President Trump has approved an unexpanded U.S. military mission to secure oil fields in eastern Syria. Under the new plan, troops will protect a large swath of land controlled by Syrian Kurdish fighters that stretches nearly 150 kilometers. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Pony Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A former member of Gambia's coalition government calls on President Adama Barrow to respect the terms of the agreement.
The fourth condition is that the candidate, if elected, will serve for a term of 3 years, and at the end of that 3 years, will step down and organize free, fair, and transparent elections, at which elections he will not participate.
10 people, two of them police, were killed Wednesday in Kenya's Marsabit County. Some British members of parliament appealed to Rwanda's president to release 2 detained former military officers. Cameroon economist shrugged off U.S. suspension of trade, and Zimbabwe government workers protested Wednesday over low salaries and high inflation.
A salary is now nothing. You can't buy 3 items, even 3 bottles of 2 liters with my salary. So I can't survive with that because I need rent, I need transport.
23 people are on trial in France for involvement in alleged Nigerian sex slave ring. And Botswana historians and archaeologists are cautious about a new study claiming human origins. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of Gambia's United Democratic Party has called on President Adama Barrow to step down from power at the end of his 3-year transitional rule, which is due to expire in December 2019. Osenu Dabo made the call on Wednesday during a press conference in which he presented his party's position on the 2016 agreement that made possible the current coalition government in the Gambia. According to the agreement, Barrow promised to run a 3-year transitional government, after which he would not run in future elections. Pandero Umbaya reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The UDP leader, Osenu Dabo, began his address by citing the agreement that was reached to form an opposition merger prior to the 2016 presidential elections.
The fourth condition is that the candidate, if elected, will serve for a term of 3 years, and at the end of that 3 years, will step down and organize free, fair, and transparent elections, at which elections he will not participate. That is the pending condition that needs fulfillment.
President Adama Barrow came to power in December of 2016 after defeating President Yahya Jammeh. He was backed by 6 opposition parties. Barrow has been accused of consolidating himself into power with the formation of his youth movement and fans club. He had also parted company with his former UDP party colleagues, the party that backed him to contest as an independent presidential candidate. 3 UDP officials have been sacked from his cabinet, including former Vice President Osenu Dabo. Ambassadors associated with the UDP were also purged from his regime. Osenu Dabo again.
The United Democratic Party, after several meetings, have come to the conclusion that the Coalition 2016 agreement should be complied with because it was a condition of the coalition agreement. If it was not part of the agreement, there would have been no coalition.
Dabo went further to call on President Barrow to honor his electoral promise to the Gambian people.
The UDP urges all the parties to the coalition agreement, and particularly the principal beneficiary of the coalition agreement, that is His Excellency President Adama Barrow, to be faithful to what was agreed to by all the parties, including President Adama Barrow, and also for President Adama Barrow to fulfill his promises to the electorate.
Sehu Mbalo is a deputy youth advisor for President Adama Barrow. Mbalo thinks that Dabo's statement is misguided.
I'm disappointed by Osenu Dabo's statement for the fact that Osenu Dabo is the very one who stood here in front of the whole world and said that whoever challenged the 5-year term, constitutional term of President Adama Barrow, he would take the pass into court. And it's the same Osenu Dabo today who has changed his coat, and he's the one who is telling Gambians that President Barrow should serve for 3 years, which is unconstitutional.
Mbalo says President Barrow's 5-year mandate would be defended by Gambians. He warns that any attempt to destabilize the country would not be accepted. He also says Dabo's pronouncement to ask Barrow to step down was motivated by greed.
He was receiving a flat salary from President Adama Barrow. That salary is no longer there. Dabo is frustrated now. He thinks that the only way he can get back salary is to remove President Adama Barrow undemocratically, unlawfully, and also disrespect the constitution of this country.
Dabo says his party has no links or support for the 3 years Jordan movement, which is threatening to organize a protest march in December. The group has vowed to compel President Barrow to step down from power. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Zimbabwe state workers took to the streets on Wednesday to protest the low salaries and high inflation that they say are making it hard for them to survive. The government says it is aware of the workers' plight, but does not have the funds to raise salaries above the poverty line. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Government workers gathered in Harare to protest salaries they characterize as peanuts. Webster Tavemiri was one of the demonstrators.
A salary is now nothing. You can't buy three items, even three bottles of 2 liters with my salary. So I can't survive with that because I need rent, I need transport. Transport, because the combi is costing $7 one way. To and flow, $14.
After years of relying on the US dollar and other foreign currencies, Zimbabwe's government reintroduced its own currency this year called the bond note. The average government worker gets a salary of about 1,000 bond notes per month, equal to under 100 US dollars. Trade unions say workers need about $700 per month to survive. Ahead of Wednesday's protests, Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said the government knows its workers are struggling.
Government does not dispute the need to give a cost of living adjustment to its workers, but was faced with various competing national demands. These include payment of annual bonus that will take a significant portion of resources, and due to restricted revenue inflows will be staggered between November and December 2019. And also the need to import grain to supplement grain reserves. Those are some of the various competing national demands.
She said the government would give a 13th check to its workers as part of efforts to ease their situation. But David Zatsunga, a spokesman for the government workers, told the protesters that there was need for the continued pressure on President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to address citizens' concerns. He said the current austerity for prosperity program is not working. Our situation is dire. Everyone knows that we are severely incapacitated and facing an existential crisis, a real crisis of existence. Meanwhile, on Tuesday night, the government announced that it had fired all 77 doctors who went on strike in September to call for an increase to their less than $200 per month salary. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 7th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. 10 people, two of them police, were killed Wednesday in Kenya's Marsabit County near the border with Ethiopia. Marsabit Governor Alip Mohamed told a news conference Wednesday in Nairobi that the government is reluctant to bring peace in the region. As Marine Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, at least 25 people have been killed in the same area in tribal clashes over the last 3 years.
Saku constituency, Marsabit County in the northern part of Kenya, bordering Kenya and Ethiopia. Residents woke up to deaths of 10 people as two police officers went missing on Wednesday morning. The clashes have been regarded to be tribal, as bandits are said to have been avenging to the recent attacks. Marsabit Governor Ali Mahamud said that the government has for long ignored the area despite frequent attacks.
The number of the policemen was 7, 2 killed, 2 still missing. So that is the situation in Marsabit as at now. This has been on and off. So this cannot be the order of the day when we have a government in charge.
Tension is still high in the areas of Jaldesa and Kukuto as police beef up security, SACCO Member of Parliament Dido Raso has called on the Interior Ministry to ensure peace is restored in the region. He says frequent attacks in the area are carried out by bandits.
It's high time, first of all, the government goes in with a lot of force, and then they go ahead and ensure that those kind of illegal weapons are being used by the holders to terrorize peace-loving Kenyans, also to be confiscated so that peace can prevail.
Bandits and Al-Shabaab have become a threat in northern part of Kenya as thousands of residents in SACCO constituency where the attacks took place flee their homes yesterday, Wednesday. Marsabit Women Representative Safia Sheikh Adan says tribal conflicts are very rampant in the area as most of these clashes are brought by pastoralist communities in the region who fight over pasture.
It is very sad to experience these tribal conflicts very frequently in our area. And it is the responsibility of the national government to provide us with enough security so that our people can be protected. We lost a lot of life due to tribal conflict and a lot of livestock.
Security personnel have been deployed in the region to contain the tension. Livestock farming is the main source of income in northern Kenya, and police say cattle theft threatened to incite inter-community revenge and raids that could lead to ethnic fighting. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Rwanda's government says it cannot interfere in an ongoing independent judicial process. The government was responding to a letter from some British members of parliament urging President Paul Kagame to release former commander of Presidential Guard, Colonel Tom Biagaba, and retired Brigadier Frank Rusagara. The UK MPs accused Rwanda of imprisoning the two men under poor conditions. Yuji Wimana has more from Kigali.
The letter from the United Kingdom Members of Parliament, dated November 4th, was addressed to President Paul Kagame. In what they refer to as a humanitarian call, the UK MPs urged the Rwandan government to release former commander of the Presidential Guard, Colonel Tom Byabagamba, and retired Military Academic Brigadier General Frank Rusagara, because they are sick and have served a lengthy jail sentence in poor conditions. We are troubled that Rwanda has imposed disproportionate sentences on individuals who are suffering from serious health issues in poor conditions. Read a part of the letter. Byabagamba and Rusagara were arrested in 2014 and charged with spreading rumors and to tarnish image of Rwanda. Byabagamba was charged with concealing evidence and undermining the national flag. Members of the United Kingdom Parliament say these charges appear related to private criticism. In a letter he wrote Tuesday, Rwanda's Minister of Justice and Attorney General Johnson Businje says Rwanda has an independent judicial system. According to one part of the letter, interfering in ongoing independent judicial process is improper. Calls for the Rwandan government to intervene in a case before the court are equally inappropriate. Lusagara's children asked the UK members of parliament to intercede on their father's behalf. Veronica Shandari, the daughter of Frank Rusagara, told VOA that they approached these members of parliament because the Rwandan government could not hear them. She says, one of the MPs is my MP, another one is my little brother's. We approached them and explained how our parents are sick, that we don't trust the court's decision as they are imprisoned in isolation. Tom Byabagamba and Frank Rusagara were convicted in March 2016 and sentenced to 21 and 20 years imprisonment, respectively. However, their cases are presently on appeal in the Rwandan Court of Appeal. The Rwandan government says it cannot intervene in a criminal case. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Cameroonian economists have shrugged off U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to suspend the country's preferential trade status over alleged human rights abuses by security forces. Trump last week told the U.S. Congress he plans to withdraw Cameroon from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, which gives select African countries duty-free access to U.S. markets because Cameroon failed to address human rights abuses. The government denies the abuses and economists say Cameroon does little business with the U.S. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroonian economists say U.S. plans to withdraw the Central African nation from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, next year would have little economic impact as bilateral trade is very low, making it mostly symbolic. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump announced to the U.S. Congress he would terminate Cameroon's trade benefits under AGOA from the 1st of January over rights abuses. The 2000 law aims to stimulate U.S. trade and investment in sub-Saharan Africa by giving 39 countries duty-free access to the U.S. market. But participants must work toward a market-based economy, upholding labor standards, establishing the rule of law, and respecting human rights. University of Yaoundé economist Gladys Mebenga says Cameroon can be an economic success without the U.S. trade support.
Quand on regarde la liste des fichiers vers lesquels le Cameroun exporte, on a...
She says the impact of the drawback will be very insignificant because Cameroon's export to the U.S. is less than 3% of its total exports. Petroleum products, which form a majority of Cameroon's trade exports, are in high demand by many of the 127 countries where Cameroon does business, adds Mebenga. In a press release issued after Trump's statement, the U.S. Embassy in Yaoundé said relations between Cameroon and the U.S. remain strong despite the change in AGOA status. It said in 2018, Cameroon exported roughly $220 million in goods and services to the U.S., $63 million of it under AGOA, over 90% of which was crude oil. Visiting economic analyst at the Catholic University of Central Africa, Frederick Ekuda, says there is little dependence on the U.S. market.
Ce n'est pas la seule destination où on peut vendre notre pétrole.
He says America is not the only destination where Cameroon can sell its petroleum products. Cameroon's government has always denied frequent accusations of rights abuses in its fight against Anglophone separatists and Boko Haram militants. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says U.S. claims of gross violations are unfounded.
Le gouvernement dénonce donc une fois encore.
He says the allegations could be interpreted as an attempt to weaken and dampen the morale of Cameroon's military forces. But they are doing a fantastic job, says Sadi, and respecting all human rights norms. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Nearly two dozen people went on trial on Wednesday in the French city of Lyon for what activists say is an all-too-common reality in Europe, allegations of forced prostitution involving migrant women. Lisa Bryant has the story from Paris.
The 23 defendants face up to 10 years in prison if found guilty of a slew of charges, ranging from money laundering to human slavery. They are suspected of running a sex trafficking ring that turned Nigerian women hoping for better lives in Europe into sexual slaves. Among them, a Nigerian pastor accused of being the ringleader and a woman suspected of recruiting Nigerian women as prostitutes in Lyon and two other French cities. She is on the run and being tried in absentia. Prosecutors say the 17 alleged victims earned about $160,000 a month for their master selling cheap sex. Most came from the same area, Benin City, in southern Nigeria, a pattern experts say seen in Italy and elsewhere in Europe.
It's a business and there is money. Nigerian, at the moment, are one of the most efficient traffickers.
Hélène de Rugy is a senior member of French NGO L'Amicale du Nid, which joined the prostitutes as a plaintiff in the case. Most of the sex workers stayed away from the trial for fear of reprisals, something de Rugy said happened last year during a similar sex trial in Lyon. Police say Nigerians make up a large portion of France's prostitute population. De Rugy says it reflects a wider European phenomenon, although it's hard to put exact figures to its size.
Victims are transported from one country to another, and we even meet victims who don't know in which country they are.
De Rugy says France must do more to crack down on prostitution and protect the victims. So must Nigerian authorities, she says, by stepping up the fight against female trafficking at home. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A study in the journal Nature tracing the origins of modern human life to Botswana has drawn mixed views from experts in the Southern African nation. The study, based on genetics, points to human life emerging around an ancient massive lake in northern Botswana. Some archaeologists, however, question the study's findings. Umkundisi Dube reports.
The Makatikati Basin's dry, salty flats stretch across much of northern Botswana. But a study by the journal Nature published in October says this area was once a lush wetland and the place where the earliest humans emerged. Local diamond miner Justice Modise is excited about the finding.
I've always thought there's something special about this place because having been there a number of times and looking at the beauty, it's such a beautiful place and you can't help but wonder what started here. I honestly believe that it's true that life started here.
Earlier archaeological digs point to East Africa as the earliest known origins of humans. The study in Nature is based on genetic findings rather than archaeological evidence, and University of Botswana history professor Fred Morton raises some caution about the conclusion.
To me, the argument is a bit suspicious without some kind of additional evidence to support the genetics.
But while there is caution, local archaeologists like Philip Sikadeka say the report should spare further research of evidence from the area.
We are not shocked that the Makadikadi would be a potential candidate in talking about the ancient and antiquity of man. Because, I mean, the whole of the Makadikadi is replete with artifacts and archaeological sites, Middle Stone Age sites and Early Stone Age sites that go as far back as, 200,000 years back.
While experts debate if human origins were in Eastern or Southern Africa, the study is already sparking interest among tourists visiting northern Botswana.
There was this article also saying that apparently human beings all come from here. So for us, it's very interesting to come here and see that, it's we all start from one place and I'm kind of home, kind of.
Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Makatikati Basin, Botswana.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The leader of Gambia's United Democratic Party has called on President Adamant Barrow to step down from power at the end of his 3-year transitional rule, which is due to expire in December 2019. Usainu Dabo made the call on Wednesday during a press conference in which he presented his party's position on the 2016 agreement that made possible the current coalition government in the Gambia. According to the agreement, Barrow promised to run a 3-year transitional government, after which he would not run in future elections. Zimbabwe state workers took to the streets Wednesday to protest their low salaries and high inflation that they say are making it hard for them to survive. The government says it is aware of the workers' plight, but does not have the funds to raise salaries above the poverty line. That's it for this Thursday, November 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.